Welcome to On the Record with Furniture Today, a podcast that goes behind the headlines to look at the news and the newsmakers, the people and the personalities that give the furniture industry its unique flavor. I'm your host, Bill McLaughlin, Editor-in-Chief of Furniture Today. So welcome to this week's edition of On the Record. This is our Las Vegas Market Edition. I'm Bill McLaughlin, Editor-in-Chief of Furniture Today. I'm here with Tom Russell and Powell Slaughter, senior editors on our staff. All of us are just back from the Las Vegas market, somewhat recovered. It was a very, very busy market, lots of things going on there. Tom, why don't we start with you? You were all over the place checking out the case goods stuff. How is the feel on your side of the market? You're preparing a business story for this week's next week's issue. What do people say to you?
Well, you know, one of the things that we noticed right off the bat, it seemed very busy. I mean, in the halls, on the escalators, just throughout the market, it had a feel of a very vibrant and active event.
I was surprised how busy Saturday was. Didn't you think?
Yeah, I was going to comment on that. Like High Point, markets starting earlier and earlier there. I was talking to people who were seeing major accounts as soon as Wednesday. And the way I gauged it, typically when I go out there on Saturday, I very rarely have a chance to really have sit-down talks with people. And, you know, maybe I'll come back when you're done with your sales meeting. You know, just wanted to let you know I want to come by. This time, I probably had over twice as many real showroom visits on Saturday as usual. People were ready to go in most cases.
And, you know, it's a funny thing. If market is off, everybody looks at IMC or America's Mart, whoever it is like it's there. But, I mean, mm-hmm. there are external factors that have a much bigger impact, I think, on the traffic in market. Mm-hmm. As you talk to people, it seemed to me that the pent-up demand of the last couple months, mm-hmm. At High Point, people seem to be either trying to get goods in really quick, or they said, hold off on orders mm-hmm. until I have pricing certainty. It seemed like people just kind of said, well, look, we have to have stuff on the shelves, we need goods, and they really came looking to buy. Was that your impression?
Yes, I believe it was, because I think this industry really doesn't like uncertainty. So when they go to a market like this, I think they've had in some cases discussions with some of their suppliers beforehand or between markets, and have a sense of what's going to happen in terms of pricing. I visited with one of my last visits on Tuesday was with Elements International. And they had a very high success rate in terms of how much they were actually going to put into production. At least half their bedrooms, 8 of 12 dining sets are going to make the cut. So that's a pretty good hit rate. And I said, well, why did you think that happened? What was it? And so we're bringing in a lot of this stuff from Malaysia and Vietnam. So that right there answered the question for a number of retailers. I think they had competitive pricing, but also the certainty of their sourcing structure with these key categories was a winner for them.
Yeah, I gotta agree. I guess it was either Sunday or Monday of market. I was going on the skyway between Building A and Building B, and I looked down at that courtyard, and you know how much seating they have out there, and it was packed. I mean, there were seats here and there, but if you wanted to get a seat, you weren't going to be able to sit in a large group, that's for sure. I just hadn't really seen that at Las Vegas market, had that kind of, you know, view impact in years. One thing, I think you're right about pent-up demand. For a lot of people, High Point in October, it was window shopping. And I think some inventories have gotten low. There is, you know, they do need product on the floor. Some people had a really strong holiday season. Also, this tariff issue is obviously looming. But I think just mentally people have kind of gotten used to it. And people, suppliers are working out contingencies. And the fact is, China, I talked to several people who had just opened new factories to work with in China. They're looking in Vietnam too and working in Vietnam. But the reason is, you know, there's, you know, Vietnam can't come close in terms of capacity, in terms of infrastructure, getting it from the factory to the port, compared with China.
Yeah, there's just absolutely no way you can take all of that capacity and suddenly shift it. I mean, I've already heard cases of, you know, people wrestling with worker shortages in Vietnam, and you know, the infrastructure there, right, the roadways, the ports, getting the goods in. I don't think that's realistic, but it does seem like the question of where are you getting this from, where are you sourcing, seems to come up in more discussions nowadays. And it, you know, an industry that's in flux is an industry that's full of opportunity. And so it seems like there's a lot of companies, kind of new companies, you know, that maybe haven't been, you know, companies you think of as among the top suppliers that are starting to grab a lot of attention. And an interesting thing, I mean, a lot of people I talk to seem to feel like the tariffs are not going to take place now, right? That the 25% won't be imposed at the end of March or beginning of April. They seem to feel like that's going to work itself out. Interestingly, I did an interview with Ron Wanek at Ashley, and this is, people can see this up on our website, and he, on the other hand, does seem to think that. Now, I mean, possibly that's because they're really well positioned, right? I mean, they've been in Vietnam now for over a decade. They've increased domestic manufacturing, so they're probably better able to weather that than a lot of other companies. But it seems like people don't feel like the tariffs are, you know, the bigger tariffs are going to take place. Did you get that sense?
I think a lot of people do feel that the 25% probably will be worked out. They don't think the 10% is going away, but I think they figured out how to work with that. And one more thing about China, there, you know, a lot of these guys have been working with plants for years. And if you just pack up and say, okay, no more, we're going to Vietnam or Malaysia or wherever, if it does stay at 10% and you want to go back, they might, oh, where were you when I needed you, you know, that kind of thing. But, you know, that said, you know, the domestic guys I talked with, they're going great guns. And, you know, they're... a lot of people are making hay while the sun shines, that's for sure.
There's no question that there's a lot of opportunity out in the marketplace right now.
I think the folks that I talk to, everybody's seems to be playing to their respective strengths. So whether you had brand new product there or not, say you didn't have any introductions, to Powell's point earlier, people window shopping at High Point and not making major decisions. Well, this idea of some pent-up demand, they're ready to maybe pull the trigger on some goods at this point. So even going to a resource that has good in-stock position, those folks were in a strong selling position at that point in time. But there was still plenty of new product that people seem to be talking about. I think Coaster was a good example of that with the Scott Living collections, the new collections that we saw.
They also had that rebranding, right? They have now three sub-brands, a kind of good, better, best strategy, which for them, they've always been very strong in the promotional end of the business. But there's a real effort there to step up. And I did an interview with Janice Yeh, who's taking a much enlarged role there, and they're really going to be trying to do some marketing for their customers to try to get the Coaster brand out in front of the customer, in front of the consumer, and try to really help their retailers pull through product, which is an interesting strategy.
It's a really good strategy because I think from our standpoint, it makes it kind of a fun story to cover. I mean, we were all over that. We had it ready to basically run right the day it was announced. But we kind of see it from our perspective, but think of it from a buyer's perspective. Now they now see how this line is positioned. You know, I think they have over 4,000, a really large number of SKUs in the line. So trying to kind of corral that, which seems to be what they did in that case, and from a buyer's perspective, that line becomes that much more easier to understand, easier to shop, gives them broad opportunities, versatility, et cetera. So that was kind of a cool, one of the cool stories at Market.
Well, I think that kind of reflects an interesting trend going on in the business, which is whoever you are, you want to be a more efficient resource to your retail customers, mm-hmm. right? We've seen a lot of consolidation, bigger retailers mm-hmm. getting bigger, getting more powerful. And so the ability to offer a retailer more, a more efficient, right? One invoice for multiple products, multiple mm-hmm. categories. We've been seeing that probably for the last several markets.
Oh, sure. At this market, I think people like Southern Motion, their Reserve new import collection, that was the West Coast debut for this. And this really takes them into even some Italian styles. It's American scale, but it's that clean look, as well as, you know, the more traditional button head type leathers and stuff. The one-stop shop, you know, whatever your if it's like within a broad a category like upholstery, or if it's, you know, upholstery and case goods, they're expanding, trying to expand their reach there. Also, one thing I think this tariff, maybe a longer lasting effect of this tariff situation, no matter what happens, we've seen a big step up in warehousing programs and warehouse expansions and new quick ship programs on the part of importers. I think once you commit to that domestic warehousing, it's hard to go back. And of course, this is, you know, what, say Southern Motion again, this Reserve collection, it's in stock 1st of February out of 3 warehouses across the country.
Warehouses, that is
the Leather story. Italia, their warehousing, they're really concentrating on their business around, we've got it in our warehouse, we can get it to you. Incanto, Italian leather producer, they've opened U.S. warehousing for best-selling items. So,
yeah, I think that was one of the things that we've seen the last couple markets mm-hmm. is, and how many times did you hear the word the Amazon effect?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Right?
The Amazon effect, faster, mm-hmm. faster. And so that ability to have inventory on hand, domestic mm-hmm. warehouse, the ability to get it to the retailer quickly, or even I heard a lot more people talking about being able to drop ship direct to the mm-hmm. consumer. It's that e-commerce effect that seems to be becoming really, really yeah. important.
That's interesting because I had a conversation with a producer who basically is always concentrated on drop ship, the e-commerce channel. And we had kind of a long, rambling conversation, and during that it came up. He says, well, I feel like one of the weaknesses that you at Furniture Today have is that it seems like you position e-commerce and the Wayfairs, the Amazons, is the enemy. And, you know, somebody, you know, and the gist was, you aren't going to beat this trend. What are you going to do to compete and, you know, make yourself better? We've had people say, well, we don't want to hear from we don't want to hear from a Wayfair or Amazon. You know, we don't think they have anything to say to us. Well, guess what? they've already changed the game.
Well, I would say in our defense.
Oh, I said, well, look, I told them I felt like we're positioning those guys as, you know, here's what's happening in the marketplace. What are you going to do about it?
Well, I mean, there is a legitimate and serious concern among traditional furniture manufacturers. Yeah. And I think what he's probably seeing in our pages is that concern being expressed by manufacturers. Uh-huh. And I would say this to anyone, we write what people say. And I've had people say, well, why don't you do this or that? I mean, the simple fact of the matter is that we report what people tell us, and what they tell us is they're doggone concerned about Amazon. I mean, we were down at City Furniture mm-hmm. Around the leadership conference, and Keith Caney was very, very clear about this. He's got $299 sofas on his floor because Amazon has a $299 sofa on its website. Mm-hmm. And, you know, his remark was, we can fight or we can flee, and I'm going to fight. And you know what? Good for him, and good for retailers who are deciding to dig in and fight back. Yeah.
I like what you said there, and I'll just share a little anecdote from years ago when I was, my mentor at Case Goods was Brian Carroll. He's now a award-winning professor of journalism at Berry College in Georgia. But somebody asked him a question like that. What do you get? Why do you cover this, or why do you cover it like this? And he says, well, what we do, we hold up a mirror to the industry. If you don't like what you see in the mirror, do something about it.
Good point.
Yeah.
Good point. Well, it's funny we're talking about Amazon and the whole e-commerce scenario. Bill, you and I, and we went over to Lifestyle on Friday, and one of the things that was interesting, and it was sort of an afterthought in a sense, but really not, because it was positioned right at the front of the showroom. They had a little room off to the side with a few bunk beds, some accent furniture, some consoles, some desks in there. So as I was kind of finishing up my interview with Derek Engie, he pointed out, you know, this is the areas of opportunity that we see for our retailers to win the battle or compete with Amazon. There were categories that were at attractive pricing, products that could be shipped KD quickly to the consumer. And I think what Lifestyle was pointing out was that there's a solution. We can help you provide a solution. And you could be a solution to your consumers as well. And I think, you know, he was saying, you know, we're not competing against, you know, the big guys that are bigger than us. We're competing, in other words, suppliers. We're competing against, we need to worry about Amazon. So that I thought was very interesting. And in the youth category in particular, because it's one of the first areas in the furniture realm that attracts young consumers that are starting to have families. Youth furniture, it's a big opportunity for e-commerce. So there's actually most of the growth that we're seeing on the youth side is actually coming from the e-commerce. So I thought it was interesting that of all the categories that Lifestyle had in there, which is not a huge category for them, they're just starting to get back into it, was youth furniture, bunk beds.
Youth furniture is an interesting category because demographically, it seems like a real growth opportunity. Mm-hmm. You know, you have, 73 million or close to 80 million, depending on where you put the date, millennials, who the oldest ones will turn 40. So they're really getting into that, you know, raising their family kind of thing. There's not the traditional specialty store. There's just not as many kids' specialty stores or children's specialty stores as there were a generation ago. You have Babies R Us, right? Toys R Us went out of business. So I'm curious, and I think there's a real opportunity there for somebody to take advantage of that. Furniture stores dabble in it, but I haven't seen too many. I mean, Nebraska Furniture Mart has an outstanding children's section, but I haven't seen a lot of furniture stores really make a commitment to the youth category. And I think there's a kind of an untapped opportunity for somebody at brick and mortar. If they don't, certainly it's easy for it to go all e-commerce.
Sure.
But I think there's an opportunity there in the youth category. I mean, demographically speaking, it's got to be a growth business. It has to be. I just can't figure out who at retail is going to step up and really take a swing at that.
Well, and you just a few short years ago, you went to Jordan's, I think it was, that had that whole area, a youth area, built around the it was entertainment as well as product, and it's about the experience, as we've heard time and time again at leadership from retailers that we talk to, and I think if they can create that experience in their stores and kind of make it fun and exciting and colorful, that's kind of what draws people in and is sort of the advantage that the brick and mortar can have that you can't have online necessarily.
So shows are about product, right?
Yeah.
So you guys got to see a lot of product. We all got to see a lot of product. From my standpoint, one of the things is I was looking around, we've seen over the last couple of years the brown has moved away, right? We've seen gray come in as a neutral, particularly in cases. Interestingly, I saw blue in cases emerge as kind of a neutral this market. Did you see much in the way? I mean, I saw different shades of blue almost treated like a neutral. Is that a continuation of the graying trend? What were you seeing from the product standpoint in case goods?
I just think it's a hot kind of what they might call like an accent color or a pop of color within a line. And what's important about a color like blue, and yes, I did see some examples.
Yeah, I saw it on full bedrooms. That was the thing that surprised me a bit.
It's interesting because there's so many different hues of blue. There's navies, there's royal blues, teals, etc. But what is we're hearing more and more, and I think some of this we saw at market, is the curated nature of bedroom. Where people, younger consumers and some older consumers too, are not buying everything suited up. So there were some absolutely great resources at market: Four Hands, Alder and Tweed, Dovetail, Sunpan. I could name some others, but you know.
What is it they did that stood out?
Well, I think what they did was they had a bed. In some cases it was a wood bed. In some cases it was an upholstered bed. Classic Home is another good example, where the upholstered bed was positioned. It's not part of a collection. They're developing items piecewise and putting those pieces together in a way that would attract both, whether it's the design community, an interior designer or retailer that likes the idea of having some variety. That's kind of where the pops of color come in. And it could be a nightstand, could be a dresser. I mean, the bed could be in a blue fabric, and then the case pieces are in your typical browns or lighter tones. So, and every one of them I saw, too, had a bed bench. Just about everyone had a bed bench with it, which is... just a nice accent to have at the foot of the bed. You know, you could kind of sit there and put your shoes on in the morning or take your shoes off at night. You know, it's just a nice...
So the bed bench is making a return.
Yeah, they seem to be. It's a nice accessory. And the thing is, with a bed bench, you don't have to buy it suited up with a collection. So you could bring it home in your car that night, or van, or whatever. It's like a piece of accent furniture. So we're going to do a special report in a few weeks on this very subject. It's actually a theme we've never really covered before in the bedroom, but the fact that I think people are buying furniture
holding on bed benches.
No, on the nature of curated bedrooms that are not necessarily part of a collection or suited, where everything's matching. Now, granted, many people are still buying that way, but this is sort of exciting new territory for the category, and I think we're going to start to see it soon more in dining as well. But your point about the color was right dead on, spot on as far as that theme is concerned.
What about the upholstery category, pal?
Well, one thing, it's kind of upholstery out everything, ties in a little bit with what Tom's saying. This isn't exactly brand new, but I see more and more. It's broad upholstered beds, which, you know, go hat in hand with what Tom was talking about. Upholstered occasional pieces. And that could be anything from a small, like side ottoman to a full-size cocktail ottoman. About the only thing I'm not seeing upholstery on is, say, dining room tables. That's going to need a heck of a performance. In color, there is, you know, you mentioned blue. There is, for a long time, it's been just neutral. We are getting more, there's some producers who specialize in color, and you know you're going to see it there. But we are seeing it come back maybe in more subtle hues for covers. It might be a blue, it might be a soft green, but maybe a mauve. But they tend to have a more earthy, natural feel than, you know, just really, really bright.
Yeah, blue seems in upholstery to really be a neutral. What surprised me, and I've seen it for the last couple of markets, what surprised me was it moving to case. The other thing I saw from a color standpoint, and I saw this last year in Atlanta and a little bit at High Point, pink. This kind of blush, right? That blush color.
Yes.
Not hot pink, kind of.
No, yeah, not hot pink. Yeah. Although I did see some of that too.
Yeah.
But that blush color, you know, you saw it in one or two showrooms, but it was everywhere.
Yeah.
And a lot of it with, you know, brass or gold accents.
Uh-huh.
That seems to be making a real push into the marketplace, which I don't know if it surprises me, but it seemed to be a lot of that technology in the upholstery side, and particularly in motion.
Mm-hmm.
A ton of technology in this market.
Yeah, there's some. That's what makes it a really fun category to cover. It seems like every market you go to, there's some new development. A couple of showrooms had wireless technology. Also, voice control is coming on. In a couple of iterations. Even this showroom, it was in therapeutic seating, they're incorporating speakers that amplify this ambient noise in a room to help someone who might be hearing challenged to watch TV or listen to the conversation without blowing everybody else out. And it just kind of surrounds the person sitting in the chair. It doesn't broadcast or feedback all over the place.
I saw a lot of it in the betting arena.
Uh-huh.
Voice activation, you know, adjustable bases is just a red-hot category in the betting business. And there's a lot of voice activation, Alexa activation in adjustable bases. Again, I took a lot of rides this market. People were demonstrating.
Right.
So I spent a lot of time riding movable furniture this market.
That's another fun thing about upholstery, especially motion. People want you to sit in it instead of stand there and look at it.
Yeah, I got massaged. I got heated. I got moved. Yeah.
Yeah, you mentioned another thing that's really coming into motion is the massage technology. People like Cozia, that type of experience is filtering into the I guess, for lack of a better word, more mainstream type seating. Another thing in upholstery, we're seeing some people take some real different directions in terms of style. I've seen a lot of Italian leather. That kind of streamlined look, but in American scales. You know, it's a big hefty sofa, but it's got a real clean look. It's off the floor.
I wonder to what extent that's being driven. Actually, you wrote a column about this coming into market, right? Form follows flow.
Yeah.
And that whole mid-century modern thing in the e-commerce space is about the efficiency of shipping.
Yeah.
And I think that the popularity of that style is kind of influencing everything else. But I saw a lot more curves this market. It was interesting. A lot more organic shapes, some smooth curves, which is a nice change.
I think, I agree. You were talking about e-commerce and in upholstery. One of the things I was looking out for was, the sofa in a box. We've been hearing all about bed in a box. Now, these, there are some companies out there, Handy Living, Modway, Abison, who concentrate on the e-commerce channel, who've been bringing these out. We're going to be seeing more of these in mainstream showrooms. Estique Ball was another one, by the way. I forgot to mention that. From Turkey, right? There were a couple of people, big names, who I mentioned sofa in a box. They said, why, yes, but they aren't going to talk about it because it's part of a larger program in development that's going to address the whole home, but be available in that kind of channel, the e-commerce channel, or for a dealer who might want to just stock it in the warehouse without taking up a tremendous amount of space.
Yeah, I think we're going to see more and more KD, RTA product coming into the marketplace in a very different way than historically.
And this stuff is getting a lot more consumer friendly. I saw some demonstrations of taking it apart and putting it together. And there are a lot of no tools type connections. That kind of technology is only going to get better.
Speaking of bed in a box, before the market started, I went to the FMG symposium, and they had a panel with a couple of guys. They had Steve Rusing, I hope I'm pronouncing Steve's name right, from Tempur Sealy, Mike Darrow from Serta Simmons, and Steve Stickler from Ashley. And they were talking about Bed in the Box and in two ways. One is I think that's going to continue to be a big format for delivery just because of the efficiency. But in particular, they were saying how, and I guess these guys would be in a position to know, that a lot of the Bed in a Box players seem to be up for sale these days. That model, the cost of customer acquisition seems to be very high, and it looks like that model may not be sustainable for everyone, right? We saw this proliferation where there were people flooding into that category with a lot of VC money, and that may be drying up. So that's an interesting thing to watch coming ahead. Please, Bed in a Box, Boxed Bed. Bed in a Box is an actual trademark, so let me just say that. But Boxed Bed players, I am not saying that you're going out of business. Please don't write me when you listen to this and tell me that you're financially viable. I'm just repeating what folks said, and there's always a shakeout in any business over time. But that's an interesting category to watch. It really has turned the bedding business on its ear. But it looks like that might be kind of turning back the other way a little bit now. We'll see some of the traditional majors start to get more involved. So, closing thoughts.
One, as long as we're talking Las Vegas market, let's talk about Las Vegas market, World Market Center. You know, IMC has some pretty big plans for development out there. We already know about the new Expo Center, but at the press reception, Bob Maricich was talking about that big parcel where the tents are right now. It's 21 acres. Mm-hmm. And I think he said the whole thing was like 59 or something. So that's a pretty big footprint to go vertical in. And he basically painted a big target on five other lines of work?
Lighting, outdoor, housewares.
Hospitality
and contract. And was there another one? I can't remember what the fifth one was. But those are some areas that already have homes.
Yes.
That IMC might be looking to look. That Expo Center is going to be beautiful.
It
is going to be a nice addition to that campus, and is really going to make that a very easy and efficient show to work. And it's going to open up some opportunities for them to do some things year round.
Yeah.
So that was a big deal. All right. Most interesting cab ride. I'll start.
Good.
Okay. Yes. Well, you and I, on the ride back to the airport, we met a young lady who moved out there to be a musician and a DJ, but she only plays smokeless venues. I thought that was fascinating.
Right.
A musician who only plays smokeless venues, that's kind of like somebody who's a vegan butcher.
Right. You actually said that. I would say it would be my Uber ride from the airport to the hotel when I got there. My cab driver, or my Uber driver, Osmir, is from Cuba and moved to Las Vegas a year ago from Miami, 3 years in Miami, and I got to practice my Spanish the whole way in.
That's good.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think my most interesting one was actually heading back from Vegas from the market to the airport, and the shuttle driver, we just got in a conversation, what was interesting was on these shuttles, there's always someone else there, three or four other people, because they make multiple stops, but I was the only one, so we had an opportunity to talk. And the reason that I was the only one was because they were losing a lot of business with all the flight cancellations coming into Vegas.
Mm-hmm.
So it was just me and the driver in a pretty big shuttle, and we talked and found that we had enjoyed a lot of the same type of movies. So it was kind of a fun conversation you just don't always have with your driver.
All right, this has nothing to do with furniture. What type of movies is that?
Well, it was the horror genre. We were talking about some of the series that are out in that area, and just different movies that were, interesting, kind of biographical type of movies. So things like that.
I wish you had asked what my most interesting cab ride was for last market, but we'll save that for another day.
All right. Well, let's stop it right there. Maybe you have to tune in next to find out. Until next week, I'm Bill McLaughlin. This is Tom Russell and Powell Slaughter. We'll see you next time.